This is Digital Story Podcast number 980, December 31st, 2024. Today's theme is You're Sitting on a Gold Mine. I'm Derek Story. How often do you dig into those images that you've so carefully archived and organized on your computer? When you're in a creative rut, do you ever revisit your own work for inspiration? Why not? For the last podcast of 2024, it seems appropriate to look back, not at the year in cameras, but at our own pictures. Then think about how to leverage them for new projects. I hope you enjoy the show. First of all, Happy New Year. I love New Year's because it's the one holiday that I can wish to anyone without the worry of saying the wrong thing, the wrong way, at the wrong time. New Year's is universal, and as such, I'm going to say it again, Happy New Year's. I hope 2025 is fantastic for you. Okay, now let's talk about pictures. So I'm about ready to close out my Capture One library for 2024. I have 3,305 images in there. That might not seem like many for a guy who carries a camera 24/7, but keep in mind that I have another 2,783 pictures in my photos library for 2024. So I end the year with over 6,000 pictures. They are organized. Most are geotagged, and some even have captions and titles. And next week, I'll start a new Capture One catalog to begin my 2025. But before I go marching into the new year, I want to pause for a moment and browse my 2024 collections. What a year it has been, filled with adventure, exploration, family, and of course, new gear. Going back through the year in pictures reminds me of how lucky I am to live the life I have. This is something that I don't know if you do this or not. Now is a really great time to open up your Lightroom catalog or your Capture One or Photos. In Photos, all you have to do up in search is just type 2024 and it will pull up all of your pictures from the year. Regardless of what photo management system you use, look at your collection from the past year, starting in January all the way up to where we are now. And this is something that you want to take a moment to do, maybe even a couple moments. Make yourself a cup of coffee, grab yourself a cold one, whatever your relaxation libation is, grab one. Grab one. And take your time scrolling through the year, because it will take some time. And it's so interesting that when I did this for 2024, I'm going, wow, that was this year. You know, I'll look at a picture and go, that was this year. I did that this year and I did that this year. And then I went here and then we got together there. And I'm going through this thing thinking, boy, what a year it was. And suddenly I had an appreciation for 2024 that I didn't have an hour before I started going through all those pictures. It's interesting how those images, and especially people like us who tend to document everything they do or almost everything we do, we actually have a record of almost every event that we participate in, not to mention the afternoon walks, not to mention getting a brand new lens and taking pictures of the cat with it. You know, all those things that just happen, they're just moments that could be in February, that could be in April, that could be in September, and they just sort of add up. And when I do this, when I go back and look at the year, and I do it both with my photos library and my Capture One library, because they're different. The photos library is mainly content from my iPhone. So there's a lot of family stuff there. There's a lot of friend stuff there. Just kind of candid activities, screenshots, lots of screenshots because that's how I take notes, all that kind of stuff. And it's fun to go through them, and you can sort them, right? You can filter according to people or, you know, any number of ways to filter your library in Photos or any other app for that fact. And then in my Capture One library, it's a little different. These are projects. These tend to be when I go on a workshop or when there's a big trip or when I'm working on an article, things like that, things that are very cohesive, and they're cataloged by projects and albums. And I could go through project by project, but I think it's kind of fun just to go up to the very top and say, okay, here are all the shots in this catalog. And I do my catalogs by year. Here are all the shots in the catalog, and then just start scrolling through them chronologically. If you're not doing this, I highly recommend you do it. And now is a great time because it can also help you think about the upcoming year. What do I want to do? Do I want to do that again? Do I want to do something different? Boy, I wish we would have done this. There's a lot of things that can go through your head as you're looking at those pictures. Then there are the projects that can come out of those shots. For example, you could do a book. You could do a book through Blurb or any number, Shutterfly, any number of the services. And it could be something as crazy as My Year in Pictures, 2024, My Year in Pictures. Or you could pick out some of the trips that you went on and do all of the trips in one book. You could maybe do family gatherings. If you have little ones that have come into the family and you've been documenting that, that's another excellent thing to look at. There's all sorts of themes that you could do based on those pictures, but those themes aren't going to come to you if you don't take a few moments to go through the pictures themselves. How about new collections of fine art greeting cards? You go, wow, look at this. I have a lot of old car shots. I'm just picking any old topic. And I'm noticing that through the year. Oh, here's where I got this old car. Here's where I took a picture of that old car. And you go, my gosh, I have a lot of old car shots. I must like old cars. And I'm actually pretty good at taking pictures of them. There is a set of fine art greeting cards right there. Just staring you in the face. Again, though, only staring you in the face because you're taking some time to look at your catalog. And then there are article ideas. In my case, as a photography writer, and there's a lot of photography writers in our audience, you're going, man, what am I going to write about this week? What am I going to write about? What am I going to write about? Go back through your pictures. There's a lot of stories there that you could write about just waiting for you to tap into them. I'll give you an example. This week when I was editing the articles for Live View, we publish every Tuesday. When you listen to this podcast, there's also a brand new set of articles on Live View. And if you haven't been there, there's a link in the show notes to it. One of the drafts was titled A Photo Walk Along the Border Wall, and it was by Cynthia Whelan. Cynthia reached back into her photo archives all the way to 2018, when she and her husband documented crossing the border from Arizona to Mexico. And the article is very interesting. The pictures are fantastic. And the cool thing about it is the story and the images are as relevant today as they were 6 years ago. Plus now, Cynthia has a perspective that adds even more body to the article. It's available now, and I think you would enjoy reading it. My point is, all of us are sitting on a goldmine of wonderful content. At a minimum, we should take an hour to go back through our own year in pictures and acknowledge the experiences we've had. And beyond that, put some of those to use. Find a way to share it with the world. We are good at what we do, and there are many people who would like to see our creative efforts. European Union makes USB-C mandatory for all electronic devices, including smartphones. And this is an article on petapixel.com, and I have a link in the show notes. Now, we all knew this was coming, but guess what? It's here. It's here. Let me read you a little bit about what's in the article, and then we'll talk about it. Over the weekend, the European Union implemented a new law that makes the USB-C port mandatory for a range of electronic devices, including smartphones. As of Saturday, December 28th, the EU officially adopted the USB-C as the common standard. The mandate means that all small and medium-sized portable electronic devices must be sold with USB-C charging ports in the EU. The regulation explicitly covers handheld mobile phones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones, headsets, handheld video consoles, portable speakers, e-readers, keyboards, mice, portable navigation systems, and earbuds that are rechargeable with a wired cable and that can operate with a power delivery of up to 100 watts. Under the EU rules, consumer will no longer need a different charger for various electronic devices, and customers can also opt out of receiving a new charger with each device they buy. According to Euronews, laptop manufacturers will face the same rules as of April 28, 2026. In 2022, the European Parliament and member states voted overwhelmingly in favor of scrapping alternative charging methods in a bid to reduce environmental waste and solve market fragmentation. Quote, "These rules are about tackling the tons of waste generated by discarded chargers each year and saving an estimated 250 million euros for EU households by eliminating unnecessary charger purchases each year," end quote. The move was described as a huge blow to Apple and its proprietary Lightning port. Under the new rule, any iPhones sold after December 28, 2024, including older models, must have a USB-C port. While the latest iPhone 15 and 16 models already have USB-C ports, the iPhone 14 Pro, iPhone 14 Plus, and the regular old 14, and the current iPhone SE still use the older Lightning port. Those items must be pulled from the company's stores in most EU countries in the days before the USB-C regulation came into force. So, I just want to thank the EU. Because if they hadn't mandated this, I really think that we would still be using the Lightning cables and the Lightning ports. Now, of course, people that are in the middle of the transition, they're going, oh, I hate it because some of my devices are Lightning cables and some of my devices are USB-C. But the fact of the matter is, once you make that transition and everything is USB-C, it's fantastic. My MacBook Pro, USB-C. My iPad Mini, USB-C. iPhone 15 Pro Max, USB-C. Even my new keyboard, USB-C. And the fun thing about it is that I just have one charger now plugged into the strip by my bed. And no matter what I have, it just can be plugged into that charger. Not five chargers, not all sorts of different things going on. Not a separate charger for my laptop and one for my iPad and one for my iPhone. Just everything USB-C. And then my car has four USB-C ports, and so I can do that. My cameras are USB-C, my OM1, my X100V, USB-C. And it's just so nice just to be able to carry one type of cable, one type of charger, and just take care of everything. So I understand that when you're in the middle of the transition, it's kind of tough, but I'm telling you, once you get there, it's fabulous. Thank you, EU. Why less camera gear makes you more creative. Where have you heard that before? I don't know. Some guy, right? Some guy with a microphone. This is an article on F-stoppers. I have a link in the show notes. And there's a little video that goes with it called Minimal Gear for a Year. I'll read you a little bit about this video that you can watch. The weight of camera gear on your shoulders is more than just a physical burden. It can fundamentally alter how you approach and create images. Carrying less equipment might seem limiting at first, but it can push you to see beyond the obvious shots and discover fresh creative opportunities. Coming to you from James Popsies, this insightful video explores his transformation from carrying multiple camera bodies, numerous lenses, and endless accessories to working primarily with a Sony a7 R5 and a single 24 to 50 millimeter lens. His journey shows how limiting your gear choices can actually expand your creative vision rather than constrain it. What started as a practical decision to reduce physical burden revealed unexpected benefits in his approach to composition and scene analysis. The fear of missing out on potential shots due to not having specialized equipment has been replaced by a more thoughtful consideration of each location's possibilities. The article goes on and talks about further implications for creative development, which is kind of interesting, developing a stronger eye for composition. And the video itself is pretty good as well. Now, the one thing that's not mentioned in the text and something that I've talked about is that by carrying less equipment, you also end up with more energy. You're expelling less energy to climb that hill with a whole bunch of weight on your back to climbing that hill much easier with much less weight around your shoulder. And when you get to the top of the hill, you actually have energy to creatively approach your subjects. The more energy you have, the more creative you generally will be. Energy equals creativity, and by carrying less equipment, therefore, you can be more creative. And that has worked for me as well. So anyway, fun little article, terrific video, why less camera gear makes you more creative. I agree. Want to photograph the New Year's Eve fireworks? Here are my explosive secrets. This is an article that's on Digital Camera World, and you'll want this link because it is a long article that goes into lots of detail. I'm going to talk about a little bit of it right here. And there are tons of pictures too, which is fun. So some of the topics here, well, I'll read the intro and then I'll tell you some of the topics. I love photographing fireworks displays. Few events prompt more oohs and ahs from onlookers. So it's certainly not surprising that these vibrant and explosive trails of light make fantastic photography subjects. And boy, when I'm looking at his pictures here, I'm going, yeah, they do, don't they? Better yet, you don't need the best mirrorless camera to capture them. Any manual capable camera will do, be it one of the best DSLRs, bridge cameras, or even beginner cameras. A wide range of lenses will work too. All you really need is a sturdy tripod and a remote shutter release. Then he gets into what lens should I use to shoot fireworks. Different focal lengths provide various advantages and disadvantages. For example, the best wide-angle lenses are great if you're shooting a large display over a huge subject, such as a castle or football stadium, but for a smaller home display where the fireworks don't spread across the sky, wider lenses may diminish the fireworks' presence. So he gets on and talking about when you might want a telephoto, prime lenses, zoom lenses, all that kind of stuff. So he covers all of the lens stuff. Then he gets into how do I compose fireworks photography. And again, man, this dude's got some shots here. I mean, these are really nice. I'm enjoying these a lot, as you can tell. Goes into all of that. How do you focus on fireworks? He talks about that. Why you need a tripod and a camera remote release. Why your batteries could drain faster. And then what exposure settings should I use? Let's see what he has to say about that. Metering fireworks display isn't easy, and due to the sudden intense nature of exploding fireworks, I don't recommend relying on your camera's built-in light meter. I always photograph fireworks in manual mode and start with a middling aperture of f8. This is narrow enough to produce a large depth of field, but will let in more light than f11. I like to start at my camera's base ISO, and when the fireworks begin, adjust my shutter speed accordingly. The longer the exposure, the more fireworks you capture in a single frame. Smaller displays with fewer fireworks may benefit from longer exposures, so you can fill the frame with fireworks over 10, 20, or even 30-second exposure. But with very busy displays, you may find that a very long exposure simply captures too many fireworks, which can look messy. In these instances, you can reduce your shutter speed, narrowing your aperture and/or lowering your ISO to compensate. If you find yourself having to raise your ISO too much, you can always widen your aperture, but the shallower depth of field may make focusing more of a challenge, particularly if you're capturing tighter compositions with a telephoto lens. Now, one thing that I have discovered taking pictures of fireworks is that for the most part here, I agree with him. I usually start a little wider than f8, but maybe that's because a lot of times I'm shooting micro four thirds, and depth of field isn't as much of an issue as with a full frame camera. So I'm usually around f4, f5, 6, somewhere in there. And then I do like the lower ISOs. And that's one thing I had to learn, because your instinct is to go high ISO because it's dark for the most part. But remember, those fireworks are really bright when they go off. So the base ISO, ISO 100 or ISO 200 is good. And then really, honestly, just pick a shutter speed. You know, start out with something like 5 seconds for the first sequence. Remember, you've got a whole fireworks show here to perfect things, and you can review your images on the LCD screen. And the big finale won't come for another, 20, 25 minutes or so. So you've got time to finagle. But start with the base ISO. Find an aperture that you're comfortable with, let's say f5.6, unless you're shooting full frame. And then just pick a time, like 5 seconds, 15 seconds, whatever you pick. You'll know really fast. You're in manual mode. You'll know really fast if you need to lengthen your exposure or shorten your exposure. And believe me, you will have it worked out in 2, 3, 4 frames, something like that. You'll have it dialed in. And then the nice thing about shooting in manual exposure mode for fireworks is that the fireworks don't trick your camera, right? Everything is locked in. And then it's just a matter of composition and timing. Look for foreground subjects. And one of the nice things that I like about the pictures he shows here, he has some that are just with fireworks, but some of my favorite shots of his are fireworks over water with like a bridge in the background, fireworks over a castle. That foreground really can add a lot to the image. And then also fireworks, if they're going off before the sky is completely black, those look different than fireworks, a little bit later on. It's a nice article. And if you're thinking about taking pictures of fireworks, it will probably be tonight for most of you, right? New Year's Eve. Then get a good location. Work out your shot first before the fireworks go off, especially if you have a foreground subject, something like that. Get everything as close to dialed in as you can. Then all you have to do is figure out the right exposure and get some great shots. And if you do get something fantastic and you want to share them on our Inner Circle site, I would love to see them. Be sure to include the metadata, because we love knowing how you did it. All right. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. I want to thank all of our Inner Circle members, our Patreon members, for their support for 2024. It's been a terrific year for our photography community. And that terrific year gives us lots of momentum going into 2025. Thank you, Inner Circle members. We've got some new members who just joined. So welcome aboard, new members. And let's go rolling into 2025. Let's enjoy the time that we can spend together, both on the online site, sharing pictures and thoughts. Let's enjoy each other's company on our online workshops. And of course, those of you that are attending physical workshops, again, what a great way to celebrate this craft that we love so much, photography. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there, and then I will follow up with an email that gives you the link to the Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online, and you can start mingling with the rest of our wonderful community. Thank you for 2024, and I'm looking forward to our time together in 2025. A big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. We were talking still about cards the other day. It came up again in one of the conversations I was having with a couple other photographers. And it was fun listening to how everyone kind of does their own fine art card. You know, what they do on the back, what they do on the inside. And it's such a wonderful way to express your creativity, to share your images with other people. And like I said, as you go back through your catalog for 2024, if you have fine art cards in the back of your mind, as you're going through your pictures, there's going to be collections that just jump out at you and you go, wow, I could do a set of cards on this or that. And when it's time to do that, make sure you click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Order some fine art greeting card stock. Make sure you get some envelopes. If you have questions, do a search on fine art greeting cards on the site, and they'll give you tutorials and templates and everything you need. Everything you need to make some beautiful cards that you can start sharing, or if you wish, sell as well. And we have a few photographers in our community that sell their fine art greeting cards, and it's a nice little side hustle for them. Longest running sponsor of Digital Story, and we are going to enter 2025 together with our ink tanks full and a stack of beautiful Red River Paper. A big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this community. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you have a terrific New Year's Eve. Looking forward to talking to you in 2025. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next year. Bye-bye now.